Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
I'm Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm Eli Roth.
This is Marlon Wayans.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
All right, I'm here with Jennifer Gibgott. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello, Todd.
Well, Jennifer is a producer of such movies as The Wedding Planner and 17 Again and the Step Up series and Rock of Ages and After and its sequel, After We Collided, and also a very, very, very good friend of mine, longtime friend. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. All things considered, crazy world, I'm doing great.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Los Angeles.
And how have you been finding quarantine? Did you have anything that was shut down? I know that I'm sure your latest movie was affected by the pandemic, but did you have anything shooting currently?
I was fortunate enough to not be in production on anything, so that is a blessing. I do have a movie, though, that was supposed to start shooting in August in Atlanta. And I just found out that we're now going to Bulgaria.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. That's
be a new adventure.
Not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you would maybe say Vancouver or somewhere, but Bulgaria. Okay. Is it a Millennium film?
No, but they have those studios there and all the toys. And I guess there's just not that much COVID there and, you know, not as much of a concern of possibly being shut down. So that is how it has affected me thus far.
That's how we roll. And you have a company with your brother, Adam Shankman, called Offspring Entertainment. And do you walk me through, because I know you worked at Tapestry, and that was you were at Tapestry when you tapped your brother to direct a Wedding Planner. So you were born in Los Angeles, you grew up in LA.
Yes.
Walk me through kind of your experience of wanting to be in the business, because your brother went into dance and was a choreographer. How did you get the bug?
I actually, when I graduated from college, which was in New York, I wanted to work in broadcast journalism. And I ended up coming home for the summer and getting a job at ICM for John Carabino, who I'm sure you know, working as his assistant. Wow. And he was so wonderful. He would take me to all of his lunches with me, and I would go home every night. And creative writing was my major at college, so I would read all of his scripts and write coverage. And I just started talking to casting directors and realizing, like, maybe I want to go into casting. But then when I really found out what a producer did was, which was that they put all the elements together. So they found the script or they came up with the idea and then they got to cast the movie. And I said, okay, well, that's actually what I want to do. So I then got a job at Disney, which is where I met you, working for a writing directing team as their assistant and then development person. And then I got the job at Tapestry. So
do you remember what movies or television inspired you as a young person growing up that made you think, I would love to go into casting?
Well, John Hughes was my hero, 100% growing up. Like, I remember seeing 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club in the movie theater and just my teen heart exploding and just wanting to make those kinds of movies. And then obviously, you know, he evolved into Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And I got to work with Steve, who was always, you know, somebody that I loved growing up. And so, you know, I would say that was a big one. I always loved romantic comedies. I'm a big romantic softie at heart. So, you know, my brother would like, we would sit and watch all the old movies, all the classic movies, like Singing in the Rain. And so he also really got me into musicals. And actually my minor in college was dance. So I ended up getting to blend the two things that I'm the most passionate about, which is writing, film, and well, that's three things, and dance. And I've been very fortunate in that regard because I've made both dance movies, musicals. So it's very rare that you can take like your major and minor in college and blend them into one thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you ticked off all the boxes. You worked with Steve Martin on Cheaper by the Dozen. You worked on the Step Up franchise, got yeah. your dance. You've done musicals with your brother.
Yeah.
You worked on Hairspray with him. So you've accomplished everything. And the thing I will say about you is, even looking at After and the sequel, you always have managed to keep your finger on the pulse of what was happening with young people.
Yes, I feel lucky in that regard, but I also think I'm still a teen girl inside. You know that thing, and I'm sure you more than anyone can identify with this. Like, you look in the mirror and you're like, who is that person? Because on the inside, you feel the same as you did
yes.
when you're 18 years old.
Yes, it's generally like, who is that person? Go away is actually more appropriate. So
yeah.
when you
in a meat suit, Todd.
That's exactly right. So when you were working at Tapestry, you were a development person there?
I was a development person there. I actually started working there as their VP, and then I became a partner. But something that nobody really knows yet, but I'm able to tell you, is that I'm actually not partners with my brother anymore.
Wow.
Yes, I am partners with Andrew Panay now.
Oh, my goodness.
My assistant at Tapestry. And then we started a company together last year. And we've been having an incredible time. And I still have a bunch of projects with my brother. So we're working together on a ton of stuff still. But Andrew approached me about a year and a half ago and said, you know, I really want to start a film company. Can I steal you away? And it was just the right time. So
because Andrew, who was at Tapestry for a long time and did Wedding Crashers with them.
Yeah.
He then went off and started a commercial company. So is that still going?
Yeah. So he's in advertising. He has his own advertising agency, really. And they have huge clients, Black Ops. I'm sorry. It's called Black Ops, but Microsoft, T-Mobile, Nike. I mean, huge brands, huge global brands. And so Andrew really wasn't able to work on movies anymore. It would cost him too much money to actually go produce a film because of how well he's doing in the advertising space. So he said, I miss it. And I still want to have my name on movies and go to set and visit, but I can't, you know, see things through soup to nuts. So I need somebody who will do that. And it's so sweet. So he thought of me because he was like, you were my mentor, which is so adorable.
That's incredible. So you were a VP at Tapestry and the script comes across your desk. And what made you think your brother could direct it?
Well, when I read the draft of Wedding Planner, it honestly read almost like a musical. There was built-in dance numbers in it already. It had that sort of whimsical feel of like, you know, the kind of Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn movies that we loved growing up and we used to sit and watch together, like Bringing Up Baby and all these movies. And so he was actually making a short film at the time called Cosmo's Tale. And when I approached Ruth Vitale, who was running the studio at the time, and I said, I really think my brother would be the perfect director for this. I brought her down to the set. He just happened to be filming. His short got into Sundance. He was getting a lot of attention. And so she said, okay, I'll meet with him. And midway through his pitch, she said, okay, done, fine, you're hired. And Adam just kept talking. And I looked at him, and you know my brother, so you know this is true. And I was like, Adam, you got the job. Stop talking. I said, this is where you get up and say thank you and leave and run. And it was actually a great moment, though, because we got to run out of the meeting and call our parents, which was really fun.
That's awesome. And then you've been a producer ever since.
Yes, I am.
So in these movies like Step Up and After and 17 Again and the movies that really connect with young people, and I know you say you're a teenager at heart, but what is it that you're looking for? Like when you read Step Up, what is it that you personally are looking for in terms of being able to stay in touch with what young people want?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so Step Up ended up being it's such an interesting journey on that because it was originally called the Untitled Music High Project, and Channing's character in that movie was a musician who played guitar, and Jenna's character was a ballerina, and you know he was a troubled youth, and they fell in love. And when Eric asked my brother who should direct the movie, and he put Anne up for the job, and she got it, and they brought us on to produce it. I was looking at the script, and I was like, you know, here's the thing: like, if Anne is doing this movie, we should just make a full-on dance movie. Let's just go for it. Let's make a hip-hop Footloose.
Well, we should back up for 1 second. Hold on. So first of all, it's Eric Feig, and yeah, he was at Summit at the time.
He was at Summit, yes.
So, and then your brother, who was a choreographer, was working with Ann Fletcher, who also is a choreographer.
Yes.
And they really did a lot of stuff together. So when he knew, because he had become a director, yeah, that she had the same eye. And so when he put her up for the job as a director, she comes from a dance background.
Exactly. So that was the thing. My Eric, actually, this is such an LA story. He bumped into my brother at the gym at like, you know, Equinox on Sunset or something. And he said, who's the next you? Who's the next choreographer turned director? Because my brother had just done Wedding Planner, and I believe Watch Remember, and I think he was had just gotten Hairspray. And he put up Anne, and Eric met with her and fell in love with her, because how can you not? She's an amazing woman. And so he gave her the job, but then he approached Adam and myself and said, okay, I want you guys to produce it. And my brother, though, was going to do Hairspray, so it was really going to fall on me, which was fine. I was happy to do it. And that was when I said, you know, let's not do like this weird hybrid, let's just make it a pure dance film. So that was how it became Step Up. Was like, we just then decided to really lean into the hip hop, everything about it, you know, which the music at the time was exploding, and obviously all these music videos were coming out. And So You Think You Can Dance was just about to be on the air. So it was just a really lucky sort of zeitgeist thing where when I had that idea, I didn't realize how big hip hop was, like with not just females, but males. So we were able to capture a whole other audience because, you know, there was all these underground dance competitions going on, and it was a really cultural thing happening in the world, actually, not even just in the US, but, you know, on a global level too, in France and in Germany. And, you know, there was just some South Korea, like there was just territories where the movie did really, really well because hip hop dance was such a big thing.
Yeah, and you had broken so many great pieces of talent from this series. John yeah. Chu and Ann Fletcher and Channing and Jenna. I mean, the amount of really high quality directors and dancers and actors that have come out of your series is pretty phenomenal. And you must be on your 10th version of it, because it's also a series as well now, correct?
It is. It's a series, and we were about to go start shooting season 3, but Naya Rivera is the star of our TV show. So that was unbelievably sad and tragic, which is happened. Yeah. So it's super sad. We were all still, I think, just in shock. It was just so, it's been a surreal last couple of weeks, but, you know, we're waiting to hear from the studio what they want to do, and from Stars. But yes, we made 5 movies, and we were about to shoot season 3 of a TV show. So it has become you know, it's its own thing, its own brand.
Man, that is quite the franchise. And so what, when you're making a franchise like that, especially for younger folks, and that, you know, you're dealing with dance that's continually changing and music that's continually changing, what is kind of your, what is your North Star on those, on this franchise?
I mean, I would say the thing that we knew just from the test screenings was star-crossed lovers, always leaning into that, always letting the love story drive the movie. And, you know, because if you don't actually have a story to hang your hat on, it just becomes this episodic thing. I mean, there's always a competition, you know, or a big dream or goal that they're working towards that they have to achieve in the third act, that we're building towards. But it's, you know, it's always seen through the eyes of the guy and girl who are going to ultimately fall in love with each other and who you're rooting for.
And when you're looking for a director like John Chu or Scott Speer or Ann Fletcher, some of the directors that have worked on this franchise, what is it when you're popping in a reel for someone like John Chu or Scott Speer? What is it that's catching your eye? And I'm asking this in case there are directors out there that are interested in this genre. What are you looking for when you're looking at directors' reels and or movies?
People who have a genuine love of dance, like those two men did. I mean, they love dance. And it's not that often that you find men who love dance that much. Mm-hmm. And they both did, and they both could speak to it and speak to why they did and what it meant to them. And, you know, we got very lucky too with both of them, just getting them like fresh out of film school. And, you know, John is such an incredible talent. I mean, it's the irony of how this all came full circle too, is Andrew was able to launch his advertising agency because John did all of the Microsoft spots using our Step Up Dancers.
Wow.
So all just really dovetailed. And he's such a talented guy, and we're finding other things to do together too, because it's been really fun to, I feel like a proud mom sitting back and watching his career, you know?
Right. So let's talk about After.
Yeah.
How do you come upon this book? Well, first of all, you should explain that it's for the five people that may not know what this is that it was originally written as fan fiction, a la 50 Shades. So yeah. How do you come upon it?
So the way that I came upon this was that it's actually funny. My close friend had told me very early on, when all these women were reading 50 Shades, she was a girlfriend from New York. You've got to get this book and make it into a movie. We're all reading it. It's the sexiest thing. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And I read it, and obviously I couldn't put it down. Reached out to the agent. And so when EL came to LA to meet with people, I had dinner with her, and I was actually given about, I think, two or three territories were bidding on it for me. And Donna Langley swooped it up, and I was at my best friend Amy Neinsinger's house, and you know her husband, Amy, and her husband Sean. And Sean at the time worked at Wattpad. He did all the marketing for them. And I was sitting there lamenting about how I had just lost this giant book called 50 Shades of Grey to Universal. And Sean said, oh, you know, if you like 50 Shades, you should read this thing After. He's like, it's the biggest thing on the platform. And, you know, it crashed the site one day. And I was like, really? So I was intrigued. And I went on Wattpad and read it on Sean's recommendation. And I said, okay, I need to have this. So I called Wattpad. I actually got them signed with UTA, and I sold it to Paramount. And we developed it together for a while. As you know, there's been several regime changes there. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like navigating the sort of revolving door over there. And when Wick came in, I had sort of given up, you know, because there was various people on the way who said, oh, we're going to make it, we're going to make it. But around the time that I sold it was when Instagram really started. And I created an Instagram account and had like, you know, 100, 200 followers. And all these young girls from all over the world started DMing me every day. You have to make after, you have to make after, please, please. Because I was in the article and they Googled it. And the author was tagging me in photos of her. So I begged Wic finally, because I said, Wic, I've had this thing. And 4 years later, these girls are still begging me to make this movie. You've got to give it back to me. So he was very kind and said, all right, I will give it back to you, but with the caveat that you have to make it independently. So I cobbled together, you know, the financing, a lot of it through Voltage, through their foreign sales. And it became the highest grossing indie of 2019. And we won the Teen Choice and the People's Choice for Best Drama. So it was very exciting.
So walk me through how you raised the money, because you have now at this point, the book is a global sensation and you don't have any stars. Yeah. And you have a female writer and a female producer, and you hired Vice very smartly, a female director. So walk me through like that process of getting the money and getting that movie made.
Yes. So since I had to make it independently, I was just started meeting with a few different people who had funds. And so Courtney Solomon and Mark Canton read it and said, we'll give you 6 months progress to production. They read the script and they're like, we want to make this. We'll go. And so because they put like real teeth into that, I went with them. And I had a good relationship with Nicholas Chartier, and we needed a foreign sales agent. So he came on, and through the foreign pre-sales, because Anna was a meaningful author in a few key territories like France, Germany, Italy. So they put in some money too. So it was Cal Maple putting up half and Voltage putting up the other half.
And what kind of metrics did they have on the book, Anna Todd's book?
They had the sales figures.
So. And then to walk me through now how then you have the money now, you have Anna's book. How do you find your director?
I called UTA. I called all the agencies. I told them, you know, it would be great if we could hire a female. And they just started sending me movies. And Jenny Gage had made this documentary that I really liked called All This Panic about... It was like a coming of age of, you know, four girls in New York. And she was also a very big photographer and had done beautiful work and beautiful commercials. So she did an amazing lookbook and she got the job.
And so once you guys start to your casting process, which I know was the hardest part because you had to find somebody that was as close to Harry Styles as possible without getting sued.
Yeah.
And your lead actress, what were the daunting things about making something that's so beloved by a very active social media group?
Yeah. The biggest things that were daunting was each of Anna's books are 700 pages because they were just chapters uploaded on to Wattpad. So when they actually became published books, they were 700 pages each. And so to take that and make a 110-page script was really challenging because we knew that we'd have to leave a lot of the material on the floor. And so it's like, how do you make a movie that is going to make the fans happy and have those key scenes and moments that they love, but, you know, knowing that you're going to have to cut out 590 pages.
Did you decide that? What did you use to decide which of the scenes were the ones you absolutely had to keep?
It was, you know what, honestly, this is where my collaboration with Anna really came in, because I wanted her to really be a part of it. She produced the movie with me. She was by my side the whole time. And so she knew, because Wattpad is a very interactive fan base, where while she was uploading, like, they would write to her, you know, you can write on the things that they're loving. And plus, so she'd been living with her fan base, she knew what was important to them. So it was, you know, developing the drafts and then getting her seal of approval.
And so walk me through how she came about this. How, because, you know, look, I'm a 55-year-old middle-aged producer that has no idea what the hell you're even talking about right now. Walk me through, like, how she came about the idea and then how she got it out there and how it kind of took on a life of its own where you could actually find it. The reason why I'm asking is because there are people out there who are much younger than me who may want to mine this kind of material. So walk me through kind of how this happened, where a fan fiction like 50 Shades and this movie can find such a huge audience.
Well, yeah. So she has such an incredible story, but basically when she was about 23 years old is when she started to write it. And her husband, who she's been married to since she was 20, who was her high school sweetheart, it was in the military, it was a Navy SEAL, and he was deployed. And so she was basically, you know, an army wife living alone. They have a child. She's actually written about this on her Instagram. So she has an autistic son who she was home caring for alone while her husband was off in Iraq. And she was home alone. And so she loved Harry Styles and she loved One Direction. And so she was reading a lot of fan fiction to, you know, preoccupy herself while her husband was away and when the baby was napping. And so she just decided one day, you know what, I'm going to just upload a chapter on Wattpad. And she did. And it just kept, like, the fans found it on Wattpad and loved it. And so she just kept writing and writing and writing. And, you know, when it was, I think it got, because it goes by chapters, but the chapters got over 1 billion reads on Wattpad.
Wow.
And so when I had that dinner at Amy and Sean's house that night and he told me about it, when I read it, it was already a massive hit on Wattpad, but it hadn't come out yet through Simon & Schuster's book. So you can imagine, so it's gone over 1 billion reads on the site on Wattpad, but then when it actually came out as a hardcover book, it sold 15 million copies around the world. So even though these girls had already read it for free. So I was pretty certain at that point that we had a fan base.
Wow. It's incredible too, if you think about it, because, you know, the barrier to entry now of getting into our business is so minimal that you can be an army wife and be submitting chapters to an uploaded fan fiction site, and then suddenly become a global superstar author.
Yes. Yes. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
And so as you got through the making of the movie, where did you shoot it?
We shot the first two in Atlanta.
And so when you were making it with your, you know, author at your side, which I'm sure was very helpful because you could just lean over to her and go, is this right? Because I don't want to get the social media mail that if it's not, because I've had both, you know, I've had both Nina Jacobson and Marty and Wick who have done Hunger Games and Twilight in that order. And they really were in the same boat, which is not wanting to screw it up because it had such a rabid fan base. You fortunately had did DeLuca have it on 50 Shades of Grey, but you had the author sitting right with you, which I'm sure was super helpful.
It was, absolutely. And not only that, she's just a great lady and has become one of my closest friends. And she's, you know, she's just a terrific person.
And when you're making the movie and you have this great female creative, core group, how are you finding now diversity and inclusion in our business in the current format?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, what's so interesting is that when she wrote the books and wrote everything on Wattpad, you know, it's not like she distinguished, you know, he's black, he's white. So there was no question for us when we went about and started casting the movie that we had to have a diverse cast. Like, that wasn't even a thought in her and my head. And so we made sure that, you know, like, for example, Tessa's best friend in the movie is this character named Landon, and the fans all wanted Greg Sulkin. But Anna and I cast this guy named Shane Paul McGee, who's actually in my brother's movie in What Men Want, who's such a talented young actor. And, you know, I was actually kind of shocked because initially, you know, they were upset and what do you mean? But they have now grown to love him. And I think it was more about they were attached to just the idea of Greg being him than anything else. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, there was no question, even though it wasn't necessarily written that way in the book, that when we went to screen that we had to have, you know, all races represented.
Yeah. And that's, you know, Wick Godfrey was, and I were talking about Twilight, and he was saying the same thing, is like, you just have to do what's best for the movie at certain points. And then by the time you get through all the marketing in the first movie, people then kind of adopt it as their own.
Right.
and are much more easy to accept it after they've lived with it for a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. But
and so now you've made the second one, or did you guys make two, both at the same time? How did that work?
No, we made the first one in the summer of 2018, and we made the second one in the summer of 2019.
And so this movie, the sequel, is due to come out.
Yes.
What did you learn from making the original and then doing the second one? And then how is that movie now going to be released?
What we learned was that, so the studio that we ended up selling it to insisted on a PG-13 rating because of the age of the kids, even though the book is really rated R. And Anna and I pushed back. We begged them. They were immovable. And what we learned was that the fans were super disappointed by getting a PG-13 version of the movie. They wanted it much racier, much sexier. And so we fought really hard this time for the R rating, and we got it. So that was, I think we're now, you know, just making a more authentic version of the book. We were supposed to come out in August, and then, you know, obviously everything's still a bit of a mess. The hope is that we're coming out October 2nd in both theaters and on VOD.
That's cool. And so how did you finish the movie, given that you've been in this pandemic since March?
We had actually finished post the end of January.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We were meant to come out and be released in August. So we were, you know, when the pandemic hit, then it was like, oh God, now what are we going to do? So we just kept pushing the release date. And I hope that we can still open in theaters and that it doesn't just go to the straight beauty. I mean, the plan is to do a mix.
And the R rating, did you have previews and did you do all that? Or were you, you know, super secretive because you know that they, you know, the fans are so active on social media?
Yeah, I mean, that we did one screening and didn't even call it by its name, you know, so.
And they were pleased that it was R-rated?
Yes, very much so. But the people who knew what it was were sitting in the theater. That was the hard thing. We had to recruit people with an untitled movie, so it was a little weird.
And you hired a great director who we should talk about briefly. Or not even briefly. So it just goes to show you that in our business, even though that you are still a teenager, that what comes around goes around. And Roger Cumble is somebody that you and I have both known for an incredibly long time. He has had a very, very, very successful career. He directed Cruel Intentions back when he was an infant. And then now he's been doing a lot of very good, very high quality television, very especially in, I guess, if you will call your genre of like really great, dark, interesting, R-rated, even though it's television, atmospheric romance for that generation. How did that come about? Because it's just, you know, you've known him for so long. How did that call go down?
You know, it was interesting. So it was basically because the fans were disappointed in the PG-13 rating, and we knew we had to pivot to the much sexier movie. It was actually Nicholas's idea. Nicholas said, "Oh, we need something more like Cruel Intentions." And then he said, "What about Roger Cumble?" And I said, "Well, I know Roger Cumble because he's actually a dad at my school. We're parents together." And I said, "Do you want me to find out if he'd be interested?" And it just so happened he was in post on a movie that he made for Netflix, about to become available, like was just, you know, doing the final mix basically and looking for his next gig. And I think he got really excited by the opportunity because it was a chance for him to kind of go back to what he loves to do and what he, you know, what launched his career.
Well, I'm also getting the biggest kick out of him on social media because he is loving engaging with the fans.
I know. It's so funny. he's created this whole persona.
And so what has been keeping you creatively motivated during this pandemic?
I have actually been insanely busy during the pandemic, and I feel very blessed for that. What I am finding is that it's actually a really great time to try to package material, whether it's an idea or a script, because movie stars are home instead of shooting a movie. So they're actually reading things and reading them pretty quickly. And agents are excited to get package material out there because everybody, you know, with all of these streaming platforms now launching and needing movies, everybody needs content badly. And the more packaged, the better. So I've been having a really nice time just, you know, putting movies together during the quarantine.
And in your new company, what are the type of movies that you and Andrew want to make? Yeah. Or a content not specific to movies necessarily?
I would say that our sweet spot is making the kinds of movies that studios used to make when you were at the head of a studio. Mm-hmm. Well, you've been head of several. But making those comedies, dramedies, feel-good movies, you know, in the $25 to $60 million space, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I've been sort of focused on and have had some luck selling, mainly to streamers, which I'm perfectly happy to do.
Yeah, I love the fact that we have a lot more opportunity and avenues to be able to make the kind of stuff that people want to make.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And so when you're now busier than ever in the middle of a pandemic, how are you finding material? You found this fantastic movie on a fan fiction mm-hmm. site. You found Step Up. It was a script, and then you changed it into a dance movie and so on and so forth. How are you, and given the fact that you're at home, finding new material?
Well, you know, it's funny because like you and Andrew and I are all sort of cut from the same cloth in terms of we enjoy coming up with ideas for movies. You know, we'll just take a log line and we'll riff, and then you plug in, you know, a great writer that you're friends with, and you're off to the races. So, I mean, Andrew is like, he'll just text me an article and be like, "Well, you know, what about it?" And then I'll run with it. He actually was laughing because I got an actor attached to something that he sent me you know, a year and a half ago, probably at 6 a.m, that he was like, I don't even remember sending you that. And it's like, I archive, you know, the ideas that I think are good and that could be worthy of movies. I mean, a lot of it. So, and it's also reading a lot of books, reading magazine articles, mostly calling from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly what's interesting is, you know, I talk about this a lot, which is that people think, oh, you know, you and I have been doing it so long, you know, just agents are calling us up and going, you know, handing us these scripts and handing us these packages. But if I go through just my career, when I look at movies like, you know, The New Guy and Anger Management and Pearl Harbor, and you know, Triple X to a certain degree, and you know, these movies that and television shows that I literally just came up with the idea, you know, to just what if we did a, you know, a found fiction movie of a tornado, which became Into the Storm, and so it's possible to get stuff made from your own ideas, and in a lot of ways it's better because you control it. You're not having to rush because some agent saying, you know, TikTok, you only have two territories, you know, like you did on 50 Shades. When you come up with your own ideas and are able to take the time to develop them and nurture them, you have a lot more control and you have the whole town that you can at your disposal to go set it up.
Absolutely. And it's so gratifying, you know, to actually then see it come to fruition. I mean, I remember walking into your office when, you know, the Pearl Harbor poster came in and you had a big smile on your face and, you know, look what a giant hit that movie was. I mean,
well, yeah. And it's not like anybody is going to hand you a movie of that size with Michael Bay and Jerry and everybody already attached. You had to, at that point, you had to go and I had to do it from just a single line idea. Yeah. So what advice, I'm sure you speak a lot because you're a very successful woman and so I'm sure you are asked quite a bit, you know, from different people, how they can get into the business. What advice do you give people that ask you that question to, if somebody's thinking about being a producer in this day and age, given that, you know, there's so much access to all of these terrific ideas, what advice do you have for people starting out?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when I'm talking to people who, let's say, have just graduated from college, who want to get in the business, I will say to them, you know, whatever job it is in this industry that you think that you want to do, go be that person's assistant and really see what that job is first. You know, if you want to be a director, go assist a director. If you want to be a producer, go assist a producer. You know, if you want to be an agent, go, because that is the really, truly the only way you know what the job is. For people who specifically want to produce, I would say, you know, you have to be unafraid to put all the elements together, especially in this climate. The more packaged, the better. And, you know, so if you read a great book or if you see a great article, you have to think about, well, who do I admire who's made movies in the genre who might spark to this? And then be unafraid to call the agent and pick up the phone. I mean, I will never forget Jason Reed, after they had made the Hannah Montana movie, he'd had a meeting with Miley and she said, I want to do a movie like Walk to Remember. And at the time, you know, the studio had a big overall deal with her. And so Jason called me and he said, can you find me a spec like Walk to Remember for Miley? And I was like, probably not, but I can call Nick Sparks and see if he wants to write a book. And then we just develop it for her. And she's like, really? You would do that? I was like, sure. So I picked up the phone. I called Nick and he was like, I need to come up with my next book right now. We actually came up with that idea together. And he thanked me in the prologue. And so that was actually an incredible situation because he wrote the book and the script at the same time. We sold the movie and he sold the book to the publisher. And from Jason calling me to being in the can was a year.
Wow.
Like that never happens anymore. But, you know, you have to have balls. you have to be willing to pick up the phone because you never know who's going to be looking for, I was looking for a movie like this.
Wow. See, that's the thing. You've always been a hustler. I mean, you've always done the work. You've always thought outside the box. You've always not been afraid to make that call to do the work. And that's so important, is just no matter where you are in your career, to just hunker down and really start to put your nose down and start to do the work, because it's not easy, and it's nothing comes easy. Everybody has to push this rock up the hill like Sisyphus. You have to do it.
Right. And you have to be unafraid, because what is the worst thing they could say is no. That's the worst thing. But if they say yes, you could have a huge movie.
Exactly.
Career.
And so, quick question. So when you are on set of something like After, and you are holding the hopes and dreams of all of these fans in your hand, what was the best day on set on that first movie?
Oh, God. It's funny because this is such a horrible thing to say, but it was seeing how good Josephine was in the bet reveal and going, okay, I know they're going to be really happy with this scene and that they're going to love it. I would say the day that we shot the lake scene, which took about 3 or 4 days, that was just magical. You know, that feeling when you're on a set and you're looking around and you feel like you're on summer camp because you've just grown so close with the crew and you're in this beautiful setting and you're like, I can't believe I actually get paid to do this. Mm-hmm. That feeling, you know, and everything's going right until the thunderstorm happens and you all have to run for the tent.
That's fantastic. And thank you, Jennifer. You've been amazing. I love the advice that you gave. I'm so excited for you and this next chapter with Andrew. Yeah. He's amazing and you're amazing. And I'm sure you guys are going to be hugely, hugely successful. And good luck with the release of the movie. Hopefully it does not get pushed off anymore, because I can tell by the crush of social media from both your and Roger's pages that they are absolutely dying for it. So congrats and ahead of time, and be safe and be well.
Thanks, Tom. You too.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Producer's Guide. We're produced by Kirsten Woodward and Steve Delamater. I want to answer all your questions about the business, so make sure to tweet me at Todd_Garner or use #Producer's Guide on Twitter. See you next week.